we're ready for our first case, Marine Towing versus Allen.
May it please the court, I'm Gary Sachs. I represent Illinois Marine Towing in this appeal. Your Honors, the situation in this case presents the classic limitation of liability situation contemplated by the Act itself, the Supreme Court, and this court. That is, a single marine disaster with multiple claimants and an inadequate limitation fund pending in a limitation proceeding brought by the shipowner seeking exoneration from and limitation of liability.
Mr. Sachs, let me ask you whether it's your position that it is simply impossible to have a stipulation in a multiple claimant case, or whether you're making the more particular argument that this stipulation isn't good enough.
Actually, I'm making both arguments. I think that in a multiple claim case, based upon the only two exceptions that this court has ever recognized, it would be impossible.
And why is that? Because it seems to me there must be some way of drafting a stipulation if you had enough people involved, if you said the right things, that would make it absolutely clear that the Marine defendant wouldn't be liable for anything more than the limitation amount.
That is because, number one, the Act and the Supreme Court provides that when limitation of liability is at issue, the shipowner has a right to try exoneration of liability in the federal court. That would be denied under the stipulations that were made in this case and under a multiple claim situation.
But, you may try the exoneration in the federal court, but the savings to suitors concept and law suggests that won't always happen.
The Supreme Court and this court have recognized the two exceptions to accommodate the savings to suitors clause. Those two exceptions are when the fund is adequate, which would mean, of course, there would be no limitation of liability because the shipowner would have already obtained limitation of liability, and there'd be no need for a concursus, which Justice Frankfurter held was the heart of the limitation system. That doesn't apply here. The second is the single claimant situation.
Well, could I just ask you about the first of those? Because if the parties, and I want to put Mr. Thomas off to one side right now. I know he's out there, but for the time being, let's ignore him. If the parties swore on a stack of Bibles that they would never seek a nickel more than the limitation fund, as these parties have, as I understand it, they've said they'd divide it pro rata if the state court awards an amount of money in addition, how can you be liable for more than the limitation fund? In other words, they're sort of talking about replicating the concursus in state court almost.
I think in that situation, I would agree, Judge Wood, that if they all swore on a stack of Bibles that they would never seek more than the limitation fund, then we would be entitled to limitation. The problem with that.
And they could do it in state court, you would think, in that
They would argue that they could go to state court and try to obtain a judgment in excess of the limitation fund and then come back to federal court. That's what they would be trying to do. The problem is that the Supreme Court, in permitting that type of a situation to happen in deference to the Savings to Suitors Clause, has required that the claimants give up certain rights that they otherwise wouldn't have to give up. One, of course, would be to try limitation only in the limitation case, which they've done. The second would be that they would waive res judicata with respect to anything that happened in the state court, which they've done. The third one, and the problem that they have in this case, is that what they've promised to do is to only take their pro rata share. That's all that they would be able to do in the limitation proceeding. They, in effect, have said, Judge Mim, let us go to state court and we promise we'll follow the rules.
But why does that diminish the value of the first two promises that you've conceded they made? Yes, they are saying pro rata, and I know that the Admiralty rules also say pro rata, but are they forbidden from replicating the Admiralty rules in any
Well, the reason that I don't believe should be allowed, particularly in this case, and we're putting Mr. Thomas aside, right?
Right, yeah, right, no, now. We'll come back to Mr. Thomas.
The reason for that is that if you permit them to go to state court under those circumstances, you're virtually ensuring two trials where one trial would do. You're destroying the concursus, and the Limitation of Liability Act doesn't permit that. It's only the promises that are made that would make the concursus not necessary that the courts have permitted the claimants to go to state court, the single claim situation and the adequate fund situation.
Well, if there were a definitive district court ruling on the amount of the limitation fund, we're not there yet, are we?
No.
But if there were such a ruling, I don't know why you would... I don't know what makes this different from any other case where the savings to suitor clause would apply. There's always going to be some tension, as the courts have frequently commented, between...
Well, even if the fund was set, the problem would be you'd have to come back to federal court and then try the issue as to whether or not the ship owner would be entitled to limit its liability to that amount.
Why? I mean, they've said that they are going to let the federal court decide both the amount and the entitlement to limitation.
That's right. But the entitlement to limitation is twofold. One, what's the fund? And in our hypothetical, we've assumed that the fund is already set. And two, and most important, whether the ship owner is entitled to it, and that involves whether or not the ship owner has privity or knowledge of the fault of the casualty. That would mean you'd have to try the exact same case in both courts. And that's what the Supreme Court and this court has attempted to keep from happening, except in the two circumstances that I've told you about. Now, if we put Mr. Thomas back into the mix, we find that what the district court did in this case prejudices the rights of Illinois Marine Towing to obtain limitation of liability, which even the courts that have ever permitted claimants to go outside of the court have admonished that if there's any potential set of facts that would prejudice the rights of the limiter, then the injunction can't be lifted.
And now, I don't understand quite what your point is about Mr. Thomas. As close as I can come, you think that if in the state court he... might be found liable in a large amount, that somehow that might be used as offensive issue preclusion back in the federal court?
Not quite. One of the allegations against Illinois Marine Towing that have been made in the state court is that they should be negligent for failing to adequately train Thomas. If that's correct, then Illinois Marine would never be able to limit its liability because that would show privity or knowledge. The claimants couldn't raise that in federal court because of their stipulations. So if there were a judgment against Illinois Marine Towing and Thomas and against Illinois Marine Towing for failing to adequately warn, the claimants couldn't take advantage of that. But Thomas could, because Thomas hasn't signed the stipulation.
But
Thomas
did sign the waiver.
He signed a waiver that he wouldn't claim contribution. He never signed...
Or other relief, I think it says.
Or other relief against Illinois Marine Towing. He's never signed a stipulation that he wouldn't attempt to keep Illinois Marine from limiting liability, nor has he waived res judicata. And he would be motivated to try to keep Illinois Marine from obtaining limitation in the limitation proceeding because he can't obtain limitation. Illinois Marine can. So if Illinois Marine got limitation and he didn't, then he would be liable for everything in excess of the limitation fund. In the scenario I just described, he would come into federal court and he would say, this case is over, limitation has to be denied, it's already been decided that I was inadequately trained and that's res judicata, and the district court would have to abide by that because he hasn't agreed to waive. And that's why, particularly in this case, the limiter's right to limitation has been compromised. The exceptions that I told you about, the single claimant and the adequate fund exception, are the only ones that have ever been sanctioned by the Supreme Court or this court. Those courts that have permitted prioritization have said, okay, in a situation like a derivative claim, like a wrongful death claim and a loss of consortium claim, or in a very minor property damage claim and a major second claim, they will allow the claimant with the larger claim to prioritize the smaller claim ahead of them, so that the smaller claim would take from the fund, and then they would be left with whatever is left, which would be inadequate.
But I don't see why that makes any difference. The fund is there, and it's going to be either devoted, you know, all or part of it to one claimant, or all or part of it to 2, 3, 4 N claimants. But as long as you, as long as your client isn't liable for more than the fund, you've achieved the kind of limitation you're entitled to. I don't see why, if they've prioritized, or if they've said equal shares, or if they've said pro rata, or if they've said anything else, why it implicates you.
Well, that part of the equation is correct, so long as we would then be entitled to limitation.
Right,
but,
yeah, again, we keep coming
but
back.
You have destroyed judicial efficiency set forth by the Supreme Court.
Well, that's a different issue altogether, though, isn't it? Because we have judicial efficiency on the one side, but we've got indications, you know, our perpetual theme, federalism, you know, we let people go to state court if they want to, and there's all often an efficiency loss in that.
But under the Limitation of Liability Act, the only way that the courts have ever permitted two trials to take place where one would do are under the exceptions that I just mentioned. Under the situation here, you're going to have two trials because they can't prioritize their claims. So
they don't need to. I mean, they've said they're willing to go pro rata, which is a way of allocating. I don't know why we have to say prioritizing. No, but they're going to create a system under which you can't go above the limitation fund, as I understand. Maybe they'll tell me that that's not right.
No, you're right, but they're not compromising. That's what they would have to do anyway. The only way claimants have ever been permitted to go to state court is by making a compromise, agreeing to do something they wouldn't otherwise have to do. That's the compromise. They're not compromising. They're saying, okay, let us go. We'll do what we're supposed to do.
Why isn't the compromise simply to limit, to agree not to fight the limitation, if you will? If they just went to state court and got a much higher amount, that would be different.
Because that destroys the right to seek exoneration when limitation is an issue, which it is in this case. And the Supreme Court in the Act permits the ship owner to seek exoneration as well as limitation.
But it doesn't say anything. I looked at that rule, and it doesn't say anything about what happens when the permission to seek exoneration comes into conflict with the savings to suitors clause.
Well, I think in the recent Supreme Court case of Lewis and Lewis and Clark, where there was an adequate fund, and the argument was, even though there's an adequate fund, we're permitted to seek exoneration. The court said, no, you're only permitted to seek exoneration when limitation of liability is not at issue. And in that case, it wasn't at issue because there was an adequate fund. Our position is that this case, the order should be reversed, that the injunction should be reinstated, and that this case should be tried in the limitation court as contemplated by the Supreme Court and this court, so that one judge on one set of facts can determine the responsibilities of everybody, exoneration, limitation, and portions of the share. There's no case that supports what the claimants have done in this case that I know of. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sachs. Unrath?
Good morning. My name is Craig Unrath. I represent the estate of Brian Allen. I think that we have a number of common ground, issues of common ground here. We fully agree that Inland Marine's liability should be limited to its stake in the actual vessel and its cargo. I think that if pressed, counsel would grudgingly admit that the Savings to Suitors Clause guarantees us a right to common law remedies and a jury trial. Now, one area that I believe that we cannot agree on whatsoever is the standard of review. They've cited Fifth Circuit law for the proposition that this is a de novo review. I think that it's important that we clarify this. It appears that we actually have a conflict within the districts. Plaintiff has argued that to lift a stay, the decision as to whether to lift a stay is discretionary, but determination as to whether the stipulations adequately protect the ship owner's rights under the Limitation Act, is a de novo review.
Because, I mean, that almost certainly has to be. Let me take you right to Mr. Thomas, actually, because it seems to me if the state remedies are going to be used, if the savings to suitor clause, you've just essentially admitted that whatever the package of stipulations are have to protect that limitation of liability. You can't
Absolutely.
Leave the Inland Marine exposed. And some of these ideas about Mr. Thomas may seem hypothetical, but I'm not sure that that's the way we're entitled to do it. Aren't we supposed to look and see what could possibly happen, even if we think it's unlikely? And if we do look at what possibly could happen, isn't he kind of a risk out there?
Of course, you have to look at what can possibly happen. Judge Mim exercised his judgment as a lawyer and jurist and came to a reasoned and reasonable decision that the rights of Inland Marine were fully protected under the Limitation Act.
But did he look at, I mean, here's this idea that if Mr. Thomas and Inland Marine are found liable in the state proceeding, and part of that is that there was privity and all the rest, then you take it back to the limitation proceeding, either limitation is defeated altogether or somehow or another, Inland will have the incentive to bring some kind of claim against Mr. Thomas, and Mr. Thomas has reserved his rights to bring counterclaims, and suddenly the whole thing unravels.
I don't see any logical or reasonable way that this explanation as to how these stipulations could unravel. Judge Mim believed, and I agree with him entirely, that these stipulations fully and completely protect Inland Marine's rights under the Limitation Act. Billy Thomas did not sign the stipulations, but what he did do is he waived all legal liabilities that he now has or may have in the future. He waived any claim for indemnity or contribution. He waived any right to assign any of his claims to anyone else. What Mr. Thomas is saying is, I will not sue Inland Marine under any circumstances.
Why didn't he sign or in some other way agree to waive res judicata?
I think that I can only guess, Your Honor. Here he is saying that he will never sue. Why wouldn't he waive res judicata? I do not understand that. He did make one reservation. He said that in the event that Inland sues him, that he reserves the right to counterclaim, and perhaps that is the issue here. As I pointed out in my brief, employers simply don't sue their employees.
That was the weak point, if you will, of your brief. I mean, here we are predicting rather than looking at least what's hypothetically possible.
I don't know as though there's any significant difference between predicting and looking at hypotheticals. This is precisely what Judge Mim did. He looked at all potential ways that Inland Marine's liability could exceed the limitation fund. He didn't come up with any. And I don't see any myself, Your Honor. Now, the law is very clear. As long as their claim for limited liability is not jeopardized, the ship owner is subject to all common law remedies available.
Well, to get back to Mr. Thomas, I mean, we would have to find some way not only that Mr. Thomas could be asserting a claim beyond the amount of the limitation fund, but also some way that his rights, that he's entitled to assert those rights, I'll say, because if he's not bound by somebody else's adjudication, then of course he does have a right to have his day in court, if you will. But Judge Mim, otherwise it looks to me like the parties have said whatever is left over can be decided by Judge Mim, but you don't quite see that same language in Mr. Thomas's waivers either, do you?
I don't see that at all. That the notion that there will be something left over that could go to Mr. Wood, Billy Thomas.
Mr. Sachs's two proceedings in efficiency point? He's saying that essentially once you're done in the state court, you're going to have to go back and redo a great deal in the limitation court anyway.
I disagree with that entirely. The what we have here is a negligence action in state court, followed by an action in the federal court to determine, number one, whether ship owner, the accident occurred with the the privity and knowledge that will determine whether a limitation fund will be established. The second issue is, what is the amount of that limitation fund? That's it. I don't see that this is duplicative at all of the state court action. Now, he mentioned a failure to train being raised in state court. Perhaps that has some bearing on the limitation action in federal court. And again, there is an area where you might have some duplication, but we've waived all claims for res judicata. We can't rely at all on any factual findings or any legal conclusions arrived at in the state court judgment. The federal court can just determine this on its own.
So why is it that you want to be in state court? You must be thinking that the state jury is going to get you closer to the maximum of the limitation fund than the federal court would.
I can think of no other reason for asking for a jury. And okay. As a matter of fact, I think one of the Fifth Circuit cases mentioned that the litigants are relying on the magnanimity of the Texas juries. Yeah, I fully agree with that.
What is the amount of money you think is involved here?
Can't tell you, Your Honor. The evidence is not in. We did make one reservation in our stipulations, is that although we will agree to whatever Judge Mim arrives at in terms of the limitation fund, we at least would like to be able to put up an independent appraisal and put that into evidence for his consideration. That's all.
Oh, is that how that fit in? I thought that was oddly worded, actually. You said you wanted your own appraisal, but that you were going to agree to what Judge Mim said. The idea, it's just evidence that you'd put in?
That's the only way I can make sense of it, Your Honor.
Otherwise, it sounded like a little bit the left hand taking away what the right hand had given, and you don't want to be there, I don't think.
In the end, though, that I think you end on the right note. We stipulate to whatever Judge Mim says that limitation.
You're just educating him.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And providing him with everything he needs to make a reasoned judgment. Now, in their brief, they've argued that Thomas could assert res judicata in the federal court proceeding. And we ask, well, how can he do that if he's already agreed not to sue? He says that Thomas has a compelling reason to defeat the limitation fund. Again, we don't see where this compelling reason lies. He has agreed not to sue, except in the unlikely event, the meaningless event, that Inland Marine would sue him. We believe that...
Could he bring a new lawsuit at this point? I mean, he hasn't sued anybody yet, I take it.
No.
He's a defendant, but he hasn't filed any kind of counterclaim or independent lawsuit.
No, he has not, and as a matter of fact, I would question what injury he has suffered at this
right.
point.
Right, I was more hypothesizing, but if this accident took place on May 21st, 2004, could he at this point in time sue?
Oh, I think the limitations period
it's a two-year
expire.
Period. So I wonder if that's at all relevant.
I think at the very beginning, this court raised a very good question. Is it impossible for multiple claimants to stipulate and protect rights under a limitation fund, or is it just this particular case? My belief is that it's possible in all cases, as long as the stipulation fully protects the ship owner under the limitation fund. There is no reason to deny their rights under the Savings of Suitor Clause. We ask that the District Court's decision be affirmed. If the Court has no other further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Unrath. Mr. Sachs, how much time do you have?
Let me very quickly clear up what I think is the confusion about the Thomas situation. I think my opponent, with all due respect, is confused about that. Mr. Thomas, we're not concerned about Mr. Thomas suing Illinois Marine. What we're concerned about is if in the state court there is a judgment based upon Illinois Marine's failure to train Mr. Thomas, that judgment would be res judicata in the limitation proceeding and would defeat limitation of liability, because that would equate to privity and knowledge. Mr. Thomas hasn't agreed not to raise res judicata. You asked Judge Wood, why didn't he stipulate to that? Well, he didn't stipulate to that, I believe, for this very situation. He doesn't want to be hanging out with a judgment against him in excess of the limitation fund and Illinois Marine getting a limitation. He would then be personally liable for the difference.
But if there were the situation you talk about and there was a finding in the state court that Illinois Marine had failed properly to train him, then the waiver of res judicata the claimants have agreed to would protect Illinois Marine against that finding.
It would protect them against the claimants. It wouldn't protect them in determining whether they're entitled to limitation, because that would be res judicata in the federal court.
No, why would it? Because it's the claimants who would be asserting it. Mr. Thomas has promised not to ask for indemnification against you.
That wouldn't be indemnification. Mr. Thomas would raise it simply to show that Illinois Marine isn't entitled to limitation, and therefore his liability is the same as his.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Is that inconsistent with his waiver? No, I think I see what you're saying.
That's not inconsistent with his waiver. That is the situation.
Has failure to train been raised as a particular issue in the state court proceedings?
Yes, it has.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.